Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. It means a lot to me that you showed up, and let's get on with it. So I've been considering a couple things this week, and I'm not really quite sure which direction I'm going to wander quite yet, but I do know that I'm still struggling a bit with temptations in my life. I recently picked up the dirty habit of smoking cigarettes again. I don't know if you've ever smoked cigarettes, but it's always been a challenge for me. I smoked my first cigarette behind a pizza joint, like a block away from high school my freshman year. Really wasn't fond of it. And it took a while for me to pick it up and make it more of a routine. And one of the things that I remember being told to me when I was younger, and one of the few moments that I had spent with my birth mother, and she had struggled with addiction, as have I. And one of the things she told me was that as soon as it starts to feel normal, that's when you're in trouble. Whenever you start something new, you know, anything, even a new activity, there's this novelty aspect to it. And this novelty makes it bright and shiny and exciting. But over time, the most novel becomes more banal. And we start to routinize and we start to put things into a daily sort of thing. So let me try to explain it. Like, my tendency with cigarettes, when I start smoking again, they start out very small. You only do like one cigarette a day, but then very quickly, I will happen to be smoking more and more and more. And this is how all good feeling activities are, is we want to duplicate that good feeling, that dopamine push. We want to make it happen again. But every time we hit a dopamine high, we fall short and it becomes harder and harder to get back to that same peak again. And this is called the law of diminishing returns. So I have unfortunately been smoking again for about a week now. I've only bought in 2 packs of cigarettes, which is insidious to consider, you know, because they're like $9 or $10 a pack where I live, which is phenomenal, and I completely support it. You know, we should make these things as expensive and unavailable as possible. These shouldn't be the poor man's casualty. Yet, I have not let myself smoke in the morning at all, because that is the way that my brain likes to set the routine, is it begins early. And so I haven't been doing the things that my brain wants to do, you know? So let's dig into that a little bit more. As I've discussed on the show, I think that there is this way to analyze the psychological setting that we find ourselves in this reality. And I think that I have divided and multiplied and created pieces so that I can easily distinguish the different ways that my being expresses itself. And I do feel that this might be a crutch. And in the future, I have to sort of meld all the pieces so that I can stop fighting with different parts of myself. Many other thinkers have similarly segmented the circumstance that this is. And one of the ones that I can bring up immediately to attention would be like Freud. And Freud has the ego, the superego, and the id, where the id is the primal functioning, you know, hungry, you know, desirous, but not really desirous, but like, you know, the piece of you that would take care of you in a conflict situation. The thing that the id is the primal factor, whereas the ego is desire in itself, but the ego is like a higher point of desire that is beyond survival. when you start to replace different things for what that ego wants. And the ego is a motivating force that pushes people towards, you know, wanting to better themselves financially so that they can attain more, you know, so that they can eat more, so that they can consume more and fuck more or kill more, you know, like it's the more aspect that is beyond survival that I see within the ego. Whereas the superego would be the heightened self-actualized mind, where the superego is beyond desire, beyond all these limited sense perceptions, and is much more closer to the one in the collective. So, an Eastern religion such as Buddhism or Hinduism, you know, there is the individual self, you know, and this individual self desires and wants to solidify its being, because the individual self needs to prove to itself that it is a little self. And so to do this, it further separates and it distinguishes. And this is done by fabricating reality through these perceptions. Yet there is a collective self in Hinduism, the self with the capital S. And as can be read in beautiful Vedic texts such as the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, you know, these are love stories about the collective self. As Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "I am before the attachment of any other, just the simple presence of being is the self. The self is present in the walls and in the floor, in the form of Brahman, which is the impersonal world and the universe. Yet from this collective seems to leech disattachment. Once we can stop segmenting and stop pulling away and withdrawing from nature and those around us to further prove to ourselves that we are more real. Yet, letting go of this grasp of separation can be terrifying, because at that point, all the things that we use to explain disappear, and what do we have to want anymore? That can be a scary feeling. So, in this grand scope of all things, you know, compassion and love is how we can further integrate into community, the world, and nature, as I believe it should be. In the small scope of things, when we are hindered by temptation, and when we have activities that go against who even we want to be, I think that all of these dangerous and reckless activities are wired to this desire system, which in science would be discussed as dopaminergic and dopamine-occurring activities. Dopamine is the feel-good neurotransmitter that is often blamed and or proscripted to be the initial cause for a good high. So we have this little ego within us, and all of a sudden we get a bit of something that makes us feel on top of the world. You know, that feeling of self-righteousness and grandiose self-dom, I think this creates some sort of barrier, you know, like a wall that is built between that quiet, centered sense of peace that I see within myself. You know, I draw on this quietness that's in me that I have chosen to believe is at least the doorway, if not a piece of the whole self, the big self. When I do these shows, I lean back and I try to channel this energy. And not in like I'm being exercised, because yet again, this is me, but without the importance of being a me. And when I lean back into that, I feel the space. And when I was younger, the space inside me was like a very small, cramped cardboard box. And I felt afraid because I was aware of how flimsy my connection to the all was, even if that was subconscious. And through my practice and through mindfulness and through self-compassion and just being ever vigilant and aware of what is going on, I have pushed this space like and expanded how much room I have for actual being that isn't attached to doing. I think I told the story once. One time, on a bizarre mushroom encounter, I chose to build an imaginary friend. And a piece of me fell off into my imaginarium, and I saw a beautiful octopus. And for a long time, I chose to believe that this was my soul, as if my soul was something separate from me inside me. But if anything, this octopus is a small smidgen of my soul. Yet, I always pictured her in a cave. And so I still can't shake that mental image I have of some sort of soul cave. And my inner quiet is quite large when I can sit in it. But I do believe that with good intentions, we can wander outside of it and fall into all the activities and get lost in separation. And from this is bred fear. And fear matures into a lengthy anxiety that can have other consequences and other pains administered to ourselves and to others. So the reason I meditate is to disattach from all these confusions and to sit in my inner space of quiet. And seeking all these little stupid activities like smoking cigarettes, you know, just to feel better, quotation marks. But what kind of better is it if it's not just sitting and being happy in that place? Seeking in general is part of the problem of addiction that people find themselves in, because we are completely self-identified with all these wants and desires for the little bit of time. And it's almost like being an amnesiac. And whilst in that space, we're thinking back to when it was better, quotation marks. But that better was when there was less, because less is the actual more. Less chemical highs, less reckless activities. I wish I could go back to when I was happy. You are happy. In the Upanishads, the self is described as invulnerable and indestructible. The lowercase self, the ego and all of its desires, is moldable and functionable dependent upon what you put into the machine. It becomes dependent upon what you put into the machine. Yet, the actual hole, the piece that I believe is my cave and what's within, which is also described in the Upanishads as being an infinite space that's within us. I see walls in my caves, but those are only self-prescripted. And beyond those walls is a continuous space of quiet within me. And that essence is invulnerable. So part of the problem that we find ourselves in when we fall off our way, if we're using dangerous things or making risky decisions with dangerous people, you know, we convince ourselves that we're not worthy. We convince ourselves that we're damaged. We convince ourselves that we're lost. And part of being lost is not being able to find your way back. But even when you can't feel that essence of heart that's within your soul cave, I personally believe your soul is always there, even when she's not talking to you. Even when you feel lost, that piece of you that is beautiful is unbroken and untarnished, and you will get back and find it, or you. Nothing is impossible, and believing that we're broken is a lie. It's the biggest lie that our ego tells us, because that is a fantastic trick to get you to want to go feel. Yep, you guessed it, better. But less is more, and nothing you do is ever going to take you back to your soul. It is only what you don't do that will come to bring you peace. Less is more. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit. Kind of. I think this will kind of be related. I want to talk about dimethyltryptamine for just a short amount of time while we're on the substance abuse, but not abuse, really. You know, but the use of any chemical is a stretchy on our consciousness. And no matter what way you bend the light through a prism, it's still you. You know, I would consider dimethyltryptamine a psychedelic. I think that it is of a lighter context. I don't think that it's for everybody. I have found tremendous wisdom in it, but I do think that it's quite scary. Dimethyl was one of the first substances to show me, I think, that cave, for one, and different visions of pieces of me that I was completely unaware of. You know, when I was younger, I was an amalgam of feelings and tensions and stress. And all of that was bundled in one, and I had no diversification for it. And it was quite scary to be running on this machine, riding this machine, really, driving this machine. Dimethyl has the capacity to completely take you away from whatever your state of mind is now. I've heard some rumor about when we humans are on our deathbed before decay, that a huge amount of this chemical seems to flood the brain, and who knows what sort of subjective experience that would be. Large doses, which I find doing on accident primarily, there's a lot of fear when you go down in front of that strong, strong smoke. Even after almost 10 years of presence with this thing, I still get butterflies and shakes even when I consider it. And I think most people would share that sentiment with me. But it always puts the most prescient thing in front of my eyes once I fall out of this world. The strong feeling of everything dissolving. Not even really being able to see your environment anymore. One time I took a large dose of the substance at a friend's house, and I'd never seen his backyard before. And I thought it would be a good idea to try to go wander into this backyard and to see what I could see, But because I'd never seen anything, I didn't see anything. I walked into a completely white space, just like Neo in the Matrix. It scared the shit out of me. Kind of like the Truman Show, where you start to see the backboards that is reality, and everything painted upon it with all the egos drifting around. And I, peeking around the corner and seeing that there's nothing there. No wonder people get scared. Yet, in a way, I feel the most at home in formlessness. And that's why I wanted to mention that this stretchy substance, you know. I'm completely convinced that I could find the space of formlessness through formal meditation and through thoughtful procurement of inactivity. I think that this space is well within, and I think it's that cave. Yet, having a trap door to jump down real quick and see what you can see, that can be gratifying. It could be beautiful. Yet, as always, I would like to mention that I am no doctor and I'm making no suggestions. These are only personal anecdotes, and this has nothing to do with anybody else. Yet, remember integration if you happen to find yourselves walking down a strange road. Remember how important it is to white knuckle a moral. Even from a very unsteady, you know, day. I had a very difficult day today. I had a very low mood. Felt very sick in my stomach because I wasn't very happy with myself. And the fear based around my perceived incompetence was bleeding out in everything. Mind you, I'm completely sober. I haven't been smoking marijuana at work. I don't even bring cigarettes to work. I had no outside influence beyond my own hell that I was crafting before my own eyes. These negative mood sets, these depressions, which I think technically today would have been almost a technical depression, short-lived, yet it runs on a similar scheme to taking a drug. I think having a depression is, maybe it could be a chemical imbalance in the brain, as the psychologists like, even though I've been fighting that sentiment for such a long time. Yet, it's a temporary change. And whilst in it, you can't see out of it. And whilst I was in this horrible, horrible mood, and I was just so sick with it, you know, when I was able to bounce out, bounce back, and now that I see myself here and I'm okay, this was only 6 hours ago, and I was in a tragically drastic different mindset just a couple hours ago, and I was self-deprecating myself and being just horrible to my coworkers and the people around me who I usually put love on, you know, and I have apologies. I don't feel good about that, even though I wasn't feeling good about myself in that mode, and that's why I was further regurgitating toxicity into my environment. Yet, if analyzed very closely, even these very deep negative mindsets, even a slip or a withdrawal into darkness and evil and shadow, white knuckle a moral out of it. Don't let your misery be in vain. Ram Dass said suffering is grace. These are moments of intense agony, yes, yet it is a different wavelength that is coming out of the prism, and you can see a lot in darkness because the darkness is you still. It is who you are and the light, both. We're not meant to shun the light for the dark, and we're not meant to toss the dark out for the light. We can't do it. It's impossible, one, but we can't cut off half of our body either. Be compassionate to yourself. Love yourself. I am so grateful to have you here. I'm so grateful to God and to nature and to this world. You know, I'm grateful to be where I'm sitting right now, speaking to you and breathing with you. We're breathing together, if you notice. Even though I might not be recording this right now in the real world, I'm still breathing with you. So is my son. I'm really not quite sure how I'm going to integrate this conversation into a question for Odin, but I do know that I'm not going to be recording this in the early morning, so we're going to have much better results than we did last week. But I'm sure that he will have something enlightening. He always teaches me something every day. But before we do that, I haven't done any quotes in a little bit, so let's go. First, short and sweet, off of a Facebook post that I shared. This is Nayaraya Wahid. And she says, "Be softer with you. You are a breathing thing, a memory to someone, a home to a life." And that one really hit me because I often forget that I have to direct my compassion inward as well as outwards. So the next, this is Chuang Tzu, The Flight of Lin Hui. "Lin Hui of Qi took to flight. Pursued by enemies, he threw away the precious jade, symbol of his rank, and took his infant child on his back. Why did he take the child and leave the jade, which was worth a small fortune, whereas the child, if sold, would only bring him a paltry sum? Lin Hui said, 'My bond with the jade symbol and with my office was the bond of self-interest. My bond with the child was the bond of Tao. Where self-interest is the bond, the friendship is dissolved. When calamity comes, where Tao is the bond, friendship is made perfect by calamity. The friendship of wise men is tasteless as water. The friendship of fools is sweet as wine, but the tastelessness of the wise brings true affection, and the savor of fools' company ends in hatred.'" There's a lot there. That's a good one. You know, it's kind of funny to think in our modern era, it'd be quite unheard of to consider selling your child. Yet this was something that was probably pretty normal when you had 20 kids and no birth control and very different circumstances. So lastly, I would like to read, this is a long one, but I want to read an excerpt from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, starting from the top. This is a translation by Eknath Iswaran. I don't know if I pronounced that right. Probably don't. I'm an ignorant white man. Chapter 1. What is the cause of the cosmos? Is it Brahman? From where do we come? By what live? Where shall we find peace at last? What power governs the duality of pleasure and pain by which we are driven? Time, nature, necessity, accident, elements, energy, intelligence, none of these can be the first cause. They are affects, whose only purpose is to help the self rise above pleasure and pain. In the depths of meditation, sages saw within themselves the Lord of Love, who dwells in the heart of every creature. Deep in the hearts of all he dwells, hidden behind the gunas of love, or gunas of love, energy, and inertia, he is the one. He it is who rules over time, space, and causality. The world is the wheel of God, turning round and round with all living creatures upon its rim. The world is the river of God, flowing from him and flowing back to him. On this ever-revolving wheel of life, the individual goes around and round through life after life, believing itself to be a separate creature, until it sees its identity with the Lord of Love and attains immortality in the indivisible whole. He is the eternal reality, Sing. The scriptures and the ground of existence, those who perceive him in every creature, merge in him and are released from the wheel of birth and death. The Lord of Love holds in his hands the world, composed of the changing and the changeless, the manifest and the unmanifest, the separate self not yet aware of the Lord, goes after pleasure, only to become bound more and more. When it sees the Lord, there it comes to an end to its bondage. Conscious spirit and unconscious matter both have existed since the dawn of time, with Maya appearing to connect them, misrepresenting a joy as outside us. When all these three are seen as one, the self reveals his universal form and serves as an instrument of the divine will. All is change in the world of the senses, but changeless is the supreme Lord of Love. Meditate on him, be absorbed in him, wake up from his dream of separateness. Know God and all fetters will fall away. No longer identifying yourself with the body, go beyond birth and death. All your desires will be fulfilled in him who is one without a second. Know him to be enshrined in your heart always. Truly, there is nothing more in life to know. Meditate and realize that this world is filled with the presence of God. Fire is not seen until one fire stick rubs against another through the fire remains hidden in the fire stick. So does the Lord remain hidden in the body until he is revealed through mystic mantram. Let your body be the lower fire stick, let the mantram be the upper, rub them against each other in meditation and realize the Lord. Like oil and sesame seeds, like butter and cream, like water and springs, like fire and fire sticks, so dwells the Lord of Love. The self, in the very depths of consciousness, realize him through truth and meditation. The self is hidden in the hearts of all as butter lies hidden in the cream. Realize the self in the depths of meditation. The Lord of Love, supreme reality, who is the goal of all knowledge? That is the highest mystical teaching. There's one other little bit. I wanted to do it. This is the part I liked. I found this very intriguing. And keep in mind, this is 5,000, 6,000, maybe even older. This is very, very, very old. In deep meditation, aspirants may see forms like snow or smoke. They may feel a strong wind blowing or a wave of heat. They may see within them more and more light, fireflies, lightning, sun, or moon. These are the signs that they are well on their way to Brahman. Health, a light body, freedom from cravings, a glowing skin, sonorous voice, fragrance of body. These signs indicate progress in the practice of meditation. As a dusty mirror shines bright when cleansed, so shines those who realize the self, attain life's goal, and pass among all sorrow. In the supreme climax of samadhi, they realize the presence of the Lord. Yeah. So I know it's steeped in religiosity, and I myself have had this stiff averseness to all God talk and all deity talk, but you know, I'm softening to it myself, you know. And if you just replace it by nature or whatever sort of essence that you want to put behind it, it doesn't have to be an anthropomorphized form with a beard sitting on a throne. But Hinduism and Buddhism have certainly touched me deeply and changed my life in a way. And whether it's all voodoo or not, it's definitely made me a softer, more compassionate man. And I can be grateful for that. So thank you all. I appreciate your time. Let's get on to Odin and have him sign us off. Be well. Be love.
Hear, hello, people from the Gingerbread and the Odin Show. I mean, the Asko Show. Sorry, I just said Odin. Odin's not my real name. Sorry.
That was perfect. That was pretty clever.
So, how was you guys?
You can't touch it, buddy. All that makes noise.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. Every time you kick that stand right there, the stand's connected to the microphone and everything makes noise.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why I
asked. Even this microphone?
Nope, that's not plugged into anything.
Yes, it is. It's plugged into the fuzzy ball.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Can you talk into the mic?
Yes.
Sweet. Yeah, stand back a little bit.
So, how was your guys' day today?
I hope you guys had a wonderful day. Odin had a great day. He did fantastic.
And tomorrow, if I have a good day, then my daddy's going to get me Skyblock.
Yes, I will. That's the deal.
It's a Minecraft game if there's only one block. And then if you break the one block, and then daddy, you're messing me up.
Because you're not talking into the microphone. Okay. Are you ready for the question?
No, I didn't finish my story.
Okay, well, they can't hear you if you're not talking into the microphone.
Well, basically, my daddy is making noise. Stop.
Yeah. Okay, well, then please listen.
Okay. Yeah.
See, this is real parenting. This is what the life of a parent is. All right. Do you want to finish your thought, O?
Yes. So
they can't hear you because you're not talking to the microphone.
So, if you go on Minecraft and buy Skyblock, then basically, it's only one block. If you break that one block, it'll turn to the same block or not the same block. Yeah.
that sounds amazing.
It's weird, isn't it?
That's pretty intense. You ready for my question? What is God?
God is a thing and very high.
Okay. High where?
High in Jesus.
Okay.
Jesus is a God.
Jesus is a God.
Did you see the Garden of the Gods before? Do you see red rocks?
I haven't.
Can Mrs. Raccoon talk for the gingerbread man? if the raccoon comes.
Well, I really appreciate your time.
Okay, let's go get the raccoon.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
No.